Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and I have lots to talk about here today, including some takes on Democratic State Senator Mallory McMorrow, who's running to become the Democratic nominee for the United States Senate seat here that's going to open up in the state of Michigan in 2026. And in my last call, I have to talk about those 15 MAGA Republican fake electors who were able to escape law and order this week. But the news broke as I was about to record this week's show that conservative activist and CEO and co-founder of the conservative youth organization known as Turning Points USA, Charlie Kirk, has died at the age of 31 after he was shot and killed at an event at Utah Valley University, according to the Associated Press. Now, of course, you know that I abhor many of Charlie Kirk's positions, and there are positions that I find to be completely antithetical to what this country is supposed to be all about. But that being said, I'm somewhat in the same field here as Charlie Kirk, where I share political opinions, I share my opinions on society and pop culture, just as he did. And I can tell you that being an American, I sometimes feel like, hey, we have free speech, we're allowed to say whatever we want without really worrying about violent repercussions. That's how it should be. As a pacifist, I, of course, never call for violence. I denounce it, and I especially denounce political violence. I always want to defeat my opponents rhetorically. I'd like to defeat them with words, with ideas, and I'd like to maybe bring some other people along who may have like-minded ideas and thoughts, and maybe build a movement that way, especially here in the state of Michigan. But violence is never, ever the answer. So I feel sorry for he and his family, and it's simply just another grotesque example of what gun violence does here in the United States of America. And at the same time that this shooting happened, we learned of two students being shot at a high school in Colorado. Look, there will be times in the future that I will have things to say where I think Charlie Kirk was disastrously wrong, where I think that he was deliberately clouding the minds of some young people with false statements and outright lies. But that never, ever means that political violence is the answer. It is never the answer. It's the same when Representative Melissa Hortman was shot and killed at her home in Minnesota. She was the former Speaker of the House there. Political violence in any form is never, ever acceptable. Again, my thoughts go out to Charlie Kirk and his family. I have to admit, this shook me up just a little bit. Now, I could not watch the videos, and that's something I don't understand about social media. I know that there were some horrific videos of the shooting, and God, I wish that they would do something to ensure that the algorithms don't just keep showing the shooting over and over again. Anyway, we are in the same field, as I said. This shooting shook me up in that I remember being afraid in my professional broadcasting career. As somebody who worked in talk radio in Saginaw, Michigan for a number of years, I can tell you that there were times that, yeah, I sometimes was a little afraid going into work. For, I think, 12 of the 16 years that I was at WSGW in Saginaw, I used to host a Sunday morning show, and I was allowed for 5 to 7 minutes to give a political point. And I believe those 5 to 7 minutes were maybe my most listened to during the 3 hours I was on Sunday mornings. Well, I don't know. I used to do a movie trivia that was pretty popular as well. It used to always generate a lot of phone calls. But my political points, that's what I used to call them, Pat Political Points, generated not only phone calls, but I would get emails, but also my bosses would get emails. Some of the emails were, you know, quite hilarious. A lot of them were, they were just criticizing. Some of them actually wanted to go toe-to-toe with me and go through, and we would kind of just go through an adult conversation via email. The ones I would say, you know, screw you, whatever, I would laugh those off. And cowards are always the ones who make threats, right? Still, though, I can tell you that just judging from some of the calls that I would take or some of the messages I would receive, some of them via letters that would end up in my mailbox at work, I can tell you that there were times I'd be like, wow, if somebody really took time to write, handwrite, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 pages to tell me what kind of a jerk I am, what are they capable of? And I would think of that from time to time. I remember one time my late mother told me years ago, she said, Pat, I worry about you going to work at such an early time in the morning, because I would show up Sunday mornings around 4 o'clock in the morning. She said, I just worry about you going in there. I'd say, oh, Mom, I'm fine. And then I remember she told me, I had a nightmare that you were shot at work. And I said, Mom, don't worry. Doors are locked. No way anybody can get in there. It's fine. I'm fine. And again, only cowards make threats. That being said, there were a couple of times. There really were a couple of times that I would show up at the studio around 4 a.m. on a Sunday. And unlike the workday, the weekday, you know, where there were other people already there, on Sundays, it would just be me and the news person. That was it. So on Sundays, when I would get to work, I would notice that it was just my car and, you know, whoever I was working with at the time, I'd see their car there as well. But I recall, though, that there were 2 times where I was somewhat leery and a little bit afraid. And both times were when I would drive up and notice that there were cars there that I did not recognize, or at least a car that I did not recognize. And I would just get out. I wouldn't run to the door. I would just walk deliberately and not really want to do much to alert whoever was in that car that I was afraid at any point. And again, I didn't know who they were. Maybe they were just sitting there just getting some sleep. I don't know. But it still did cause some alarm. And I remember walking in and talking to my news person at the time and said, did you see a car there? And they're like, no, I didn't see anything there. And then we both look outside the back window and notice that the car wasn't there anymore. And then there was another time that there was a car parked way in the back. And I was a little bit leery about that too, but it looked abandoned, looked like somebody left it there maybe on a Friday or Saturday night waiting for it to get towed. Still though, your eyes opened up at those moments. It's all because of some of the messages that I would receive, because you never know what people are capable of. I remember a fellow news person at that station telling me how they were a little concerned for their safety when they attended a Trump rally. I think it was in Freeland one time, and they were just worried when Trump told everybody how the press was awful to him and people turned around, pointed, and would swear at all the press members. This was a younger guy, you know, who was a reporter, and he said, yeah, I didn't feel the most comfortable at that moment, and I got it. I remember maybe being the most frightened was when that, what was her name? Was that Ashley Parker? Was that her name? Oh, no, Allison Parker. When Allison Parker was shot and killed on live television, she was that reporter in Virginia, and she was shot and killed on live television. I remember thinking at that time, I was like, wow, of all the times that I go out on remotes, you know, there's no bodyguard protection or anything. You never, ever really know. Now, you can't live in constant fear. I understand that. But still, you just never know. And in today's political climate, I can understand why there's a lot of trepidation out there. We are living in some turbulent times right now. And I have to tell you, and I'm just speaking from the heart here, I don't see it getting much better. I really don't, at least not for the near term. Now, you're going to hear all kinds of people saying, well, it's time to tone down the political rhetoric. Well, unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen at the top. Do you? But yeah, I will say that this death, this murder of Charlie Kirk via gun, it's disturbing, and we can't have that in this country. We can do more to stop this kind of stuff from happening in this country. We can do more when it comes to gun violence. We really can, because gun violence, it crosses the political spectrum. It doesn't harm just Democrats. It doesn't harm just Republicans. Gun violence is pervasive. We can do better, but we choose not to. So again, my condolences to Charlie Kirk and his family. And remember, for our side, we can always, always defeat right-wing extremism by having strong, bold ideas and by outnumbering them, not in a violent way, but at the ballot box. You're listening to LOL.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's Rock and Rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
I had a couple of guests lined up to go this week, but, well, sometimes things come up and plans change. But next week, I'll have Terrence Martin, who is the president of the Michigan chapter of the American Federation of Teachers, here on the show. And he's coming on because as the state fiscal year budget gets closer and closer here on October the 1st, that deadline, and there's no education budget to speak of yet, President Martin will talk about the importance of getting an education budget done here for schools, what the Republican budget would do to schools, and how the Democratic Senate and Governor Whitmer can fight for public schools and for their teachers. That's coming up next week when Terrence Martin, president of the American Federation of Teachers, joins the show. You can always email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. And I know I didn't post a new YouTube short here this past week, but I will next week and maybe even a couple, actually. You can find Left of Lansing on YouTube. Just search for Left of Lansing in the search bar and then subscribe, because that really helps us a lot, especially with algorithms and all that stuff. Okay, let's talk about this campaign ad from Michigan Democratic United States Senate candidate Mallory McMorrow, who's currently a state senator in Royal Oak. Listen.
Football is back, and 7 hours of commercial-free football.
Whopper, 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 whopper.
Is not. This is just the latest example of corporate greed ruining the things we love. Because it's not just commercials on TV. It's also your grocery store run. Where chicken wings are gonna cost you 19 bucks. Or a bag of chips, $5. Even beer is getting more expensive. It's a 1-2 punch. Tariffs that are making everything more expensive, and corporations that are squeezing every last dime out of us. And if at some point this season you're headed to a game, you can expect to pay all kinds of fees on top of an already expensive ticket price. We have a system that caters to billionaires and corporations over everyday people. Chicken, chips, tickets, beer. Everything's getting more expensive. All the while, Donald Trump is telling us that
prices are down at tremendous numbers,
while he's selling us out to the same corporations who are jacking up prices on the things that we love. And look, on this campaign, we are talking about creating a new American dream. A lot of times, that's the big stuff. Making sure you can afford to buy a house, you can afford to start a family, you can afford to save for retirement. Sometimes, it's just making sure that you can afford to take a break on Sundays without breaking the bank.
Whopper, 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 whopper.
All right, nice reference by McMorrow there on how the NFL Red Zone ended its long-standing tradition of 7 hours of commercial-free football last week, of course, after ESPN and Disney got control of Red Zone. And I can attest that McMorrow's not pretending here when it comes to her knowledge of sports, because back when she was a first-year state senator, Mallory McMorrow answered my one football-related question here back in 2019.
One more important question. On October 26th of 2019, does this mean that you'll be cheering for Notre Dame over Michigan?
Oh, my God, yeah. that is not even a question. Listen, I know where I live, but I know where my loyalties lie. I married a Spartan, so even though it's a slightly different game there, but I am very good friends with Jordan Acker, one of U of M's new regents, and we will have a good, healthily competitive day.
So I don't doubt her enthusiasm for football. The NFL season with the first Lions game happened last weekend, and that's when this ad first appeared. And in my opinion, I think it was an effective way to start the ad's theme of how we're all getting nickel and dimed. Well, you know, more expensive than that, actually, but how we're getting ripped off daily by corporate and government forces. I haven't been able to relocate the tweet, but I read one in which the user shared the ad and then criticized the video for being too establishment Democrat and maybe too performative. Now, I'll have more on that here in just a moment, but for this particular ad, I have a different nuanced take here. First of all, like New York City mayoral candidate and Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani, based his highly effective and popular campaign on affordability. So is McMorrow in that ad. And she's right to focus on affordability. Dear Leader and his MAGA Republican Party promised to lower prices and to end inflation. Of course, to reverse prices would be deflation, which is worse. And a little inflation is actually good for the economy. But prices are rising fast. And the people are struggling to pay for food, rent, child care, and health care, all while their wages are not rising with the costs. Now, my second point here, Senator McMorrow's correct to point out how we should all be able to enjoy a 3 to 4 hour break from our daily lives to enjoy some Lions football without having to go in debt. And she's right to point out that while millions in the working class are hurting from the Trump regime's and the MAGA Republican Congress's policies, NFL football games continue to price out the average fan. But the working class is not able to afford a trip to downtown Detroit with exorbitant parking costs, little to no public transit options, and expensive food and drink options while inside Ford Field. At the same time, the owners and the sports leagues expect and demand taxpayers to carry the financial burdens of paying for their elite stadiums. Don't ask the billionaires to really put a whole lot into that. They want you to put all that money into their nice little stadiums, even though studies have shown little to no economic benefit for the areas surrounding and housing these big league stadiums. But I digress. And Senator McMorrow does a fine job in that ad explaining the cost of just getting some basic food like chips and beer to just stay home and watch a game, since grocery prices keep climbing and climbing and climbing. I mean, you'd think the greedflation would end ever since corporations celebrated how their precious corporate tax rates are getting slashed again by the MAGA murder budget. So I think McMorrow does a good job here in this ad pointing to the inaffordability of many goods and services for working class Michiganders. And McMorrow also does a good job at the end of the spot there, talking while sitting on a couch with a Schwartz beer from Michigan in her hand. And of course, you heard her open the beer at the very end. And it reminded me of Democratic Congresswoman Kristen McDonald Rivett's campaign ad last year, in which she was just sitting at a bar looking like a normal working class mom having a beer, claiming to work for families while she also hates Ohio. Now, if you've been listening, you know that I've been very critical of some of McDonald Rivett's votes since she made it to Congress, and some of those votes have been atrocious for the working class, and I'll just keep calling them as I see them, you know, whenever these votes come across. However, she did vote against the MAGA murder budget and some other bills, so I guess I have to give her credit when credit is due. But I'm just simply pointing out how Mallory McMorrow's biggest political asset, I believe, is her ability to communicate with the people. I mean, she sounds like she's someone you could, yes, have a beer with and talk football with and, you know, talk about whatever shows are streaming, and you could talk politics with her. And I've always thought that's where she has some political gifts there. But even more, she is talking affordability, which again is echoing the successful campaign plank of one Zoran Mandani. So I think Mallory McMorrow's ad right there was quite effective at reaching working class voters. Well, that being said, I like to reiterate that I have not endorsed either McMorrow or Dr. Abdul El-Sayed for the Michigan Senate race. I have, though, announced my steadfast and complete opposition to Congresswoman Haley Stevens becoming the Democratic candidate. She's not quick on her feet. She's giving awful, awful interviews. And she is a fierce supporter of the right-wing Netanyahu regime in Israel as it continues its genocide against the Palestinian people. And I think it's becoming pretty obvious that Stevens and her people understand how quickly the Democratic-based electorate is moving away from the failed Democratic Party establishment, which is why this week Stevens put out a statement criticizing the presumed Republican Senate candidate, Florida Mike Rogers, who called on his dear leader Trump to send in the military to patrol the streets of downtown Detroit. Now, how Florida Mike Rogers would even know what it's like in downtown Detroit is amazing, since he lived a long time in the state of Florida. But Stevens proclaimed that it was wrong in 1967 to send in the National Guard, and it's wrong now. Okay, but this is the same woman who back in 2016 shouted that we must send in the National Guard to take over the streets of Chicago. She has no political will or political skill, all right? That's so plainly obvious. If Democrats are going to have a chance to defeat Florida Mike Rogers for a second time, you know, and remember, Florida Mike Rogers made his money in Florida as a defense contracting lobbyist, but who at the same time derides socialism. If Democrats are going to have a chance to beat this guy, they can't put Haley Stevens up against this guy who's nothing but Dear Leader Trump's water boy. They need somebody who is going to fight against this guy. And that's why it's smart for McMorrow and Dr. Al-Sayed to make speeches and presentations discussing how they'll plan to make things more affordable for the working class as the working class continues to get screwed and get squeezed by the corporate oligarchs running this country and who are everywhere within the Trump regime. I mean, Florida Mike Rogers and Haley Stevens, they tend to agree on a lot of things, especially when it comes to Israel. Now, back to the working class. I think New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gave a quick lesson this week on how all Democrats must sound like when talking about the working class getting left behind while the oligarchs keep raking in all of the cash and all the benefits.
There has to be a way where we can all be compensated in a way that allows us to live and feed our kids. And I think it's very understandable when you feel like you've inherited this world that I don't even know how a lot of people even make it.
How are people supposed to make it nowadays? How? The Detroit Free Press reported this week how a few more maternity departments at rural hospitals in the Upper Peninsula are closing, leaving women having to drive some 30 or 40 extra minutes to receive care. Not to mention how the MAGA murder budget will lead to additional rural hospital closures in the state. Many Michiganders right now are wondering how these MAGA Republican policies are pro-worker, not to mention pro-life. We learned last week how the August jobs report showed just 22,000 jobs were created. Just 22,000. The unemployment rate for young people ages 16 to 22 is now 10.5%. The unemployment rate for black teens is around 24%, the highest since May of 2020 when Dear Leader was in control of the pandemic. And auto manufacturing employment is down by 7,000 jobs since last year. I mean, I don't get it. I really don't get it. I mean, I just cannot believe that Dear Leader's economy, where Elon Musk and Betsy DeVos got huge tax breaks, how that's not lifting all boats. I'm just stunned, I tell you, stunned. Of course, the regime's insane tariff scheme is causing companies to freeze hiring, which is hurting young people. And manufacturing employment numbers are dropping fast thanks to the regime's tariffs as well. On top of that, the regime is attacking union and worker rights with a vengeance. So that's not helping the working class either. And please don't forget how many Michigan Republicans are promising that if they get control of state government again, they will restore right to work for less, which guts unions and guts the working class. Oh, and thanks to the MAGA murder budget, billions of dollars in clean energy expansion and advancements are being gutted to please the regime's fossil fuel oligarch donors, which means thousands and thousands of clean energy jobs, some in manufacturing here in Michigan, are being cut as well. And at the same time, MAGA Republicans slash Medicaid to further deliver some pain to the working class. So again, Betsy DeVos and Elon Musk and Dear Leader and his family receive massive tax breaks. The economy is doing great for them, but is cratering for the rest of us. And Dear Leader's tariffs are being felt costing Americans, since tariffs are a regressive tax on consumers. Remember, every Michigan MAGA Republican celebrated these moves, every single one of them. So, concentrating on the economy, on working class Michiganders, focusing on affordability is a smart move to take. And that's why I believe that Senator McMorrow's ad was effective. It was effective, at least on that front. However, as for Gaza, which is going to remain a campaign issue in Democratic primaries, especially here in Michigan, McMorrow made a statement back in July. And if you missed it, I like to play the full 2-minute clip, okay? I don't want to do any editing. I want you to hear it for yourselves. Listen.
I feel like I have to start there because I look at my daughter and I can't look at the photos and the videos of what we're seeing come out of Gaza and not just be absolutely heartbroken. It is indefensible what is happening. And we've gotten to a point where Donald Trump has said this is starvation. Benjamin Netanyahu is telling us it's not starvation. And we cannot let this man tell us that what we are seeing with our own eyes is not what is actually happening. So here's what I believe we need to do to get out of this crisis. Number one, the first primary thing that has to be done immediately is humanitarian aid and food has to get into Gaza. And we have to hold Netanyahu accountable for making sure that that food and that aid gets to the families who need it desperately. Number two, the United States has to stop providing Netanyahu with offensive weapons that do nothing but continue to extend this war. Number three, Hamas has to release all of the hostages and disarm. And that leads to number four, which is we have to get to a permanent ceasefire. And I say all of this thinking about this crisis, what we have seen play out, and it feels like we've lost the humanity in this issue. And what is true is that Palestinians deserve security and peace. Israelis deserve security and peace. And the United States, as the most powerful nation in the world, has to do everything in our power and our influence to make it all happen.
Okay, so I can tell you, I recall watching this video and saying to myself, eh, and re-listening to her statement a couple of months later, I'm left shaking my head, still going, eh. I mean, sure, she was critical of Netanyahu, which is kind of a slam dunk, or should be for any Democratic candidate. Well, that's not really the case for Haley Stevens, who's received millions of dollars in backing from AIPAC during her time in Congress. Dr. Al-Sayed was part of the uncommitted movement, which has to be stated, and I will repeat that I voted uncommitted in the Democratic primary last year. But back to McMorrow, she said that she liked to ban offensive weapons, which I suppose is a step further to the common sense side than many other Democrats, so I guess that's okay. However, she called it a crisis, what's happening in Gaza, not a genocide. I mean, she still danced around that whole issue. Just call it what it is. It is a genocide. And she still danced around the issue and refused to call out Netanyahu's government for blocking the press from viewing its genocide happening in real time, and for Israel's continued slaughter of the Palestinian people. I mean, she couldn't bring herself to say the right thing, the right word, which is genocide, which is astounding considering how in a recent Quinnipiac poll showed that 77% of Democratic voters considered Israel's actions in Gaza to be a genocide. And 51% of independents believe it's a genocide. Also, 60% of Americans oppose the United States sending military aid to Israel as it continues its terrorism on the Palestinian people. Why is it so hard for some Democrats to understand where the party is? If it sounded like Senator McMorrow was twisting herself in knots, well, she was. She was. And then, as I was researching for this show, a big story dropped here on September the 10th. And the story is by the news organization known as DropSite. And it was written by a fantastic reporter, Ryan Grimm. And it's titled, Michigan Democratic Senate Candidate Privately Drafted Outstanding, in quotation marks, AIPAC Position Paper Supporters Claim. And here's what Ryan Grimm reports. He says, Mallory McMorrow, a leading Michigan Senate candidate, has privately produced an AIPAC position paper that is, quote unquote, outstanding, but has not made it public, according to her supporter, Rob Kalman, who spoke on a recent McMorrow donor call. The position paper, he describes, has not yet been made public. Kalman is a former mayor of Eagle Harbor, Michigan, and said on the call that he has been in close touch with local and national AIPAC leadership. A recording of the August 20th call was obtained by DropSite. So they have provided the audio, which I'm going to play parts of that audio here for you, and I will link to the story wherever you're listening to the show. And please subscribe to DropSite because they do some fantastic reporting there on a daily basis. Now, I'd like to note that McMorrow is asking AIPAC to stay out of the race, while Haley Stevens has said no such thing, naturally. But it seems like McMorrow is doing a little more here, a little more than meets the eye. As you'll soon hear from the audio obtained by DropSite, you will hear the wife of donor Scott Loney. Her name is Sarah Loney Marks. And then you'll hear McMorrow campaign manager Wesley Daniels try her best to give some vague answers as to whether or not the campaign will someday talk with AIPAC. Listen.
This is Sarah, Scott's wife. I want to kind of go back to what Kelly said about Israel. One of my big concerns as we're talking money is the AIPAC contribution to Haley Stevens, which allowed her to beat Levin in the last campaign. Most of the people I know, especially younger Jewish people, were supporting Stevens because AIPAC supported Stevens, and they did not like Levin's position on Israel. And I think you need to be very thoughtful about how you position this, but also understand that AIPAC comes in towards the end of the cycle of the primaries, and that's a huge infusion of cash. And they're not necessarily a corporate PAC, so I just don't know how you're considering their money.
We've been talking about it a lot. Yes, that's absolutely a reality. What I will say is that I think that Mallory is where most of the electorate is. I think she's been really thoughtful on the issue, and I think we've been in conversation with anyone who wants to talk about this. And I think that on the whole, most people have found that Mallory, even if they disagree with Mallory, they think she has been very thoughtful on the issue, and she's accessible and honest and transparent. So I think that our hope is that AIPAC doesn't get involved in the race, but we'll wait and see.
Is she willing to talk to them? Because they absolutely will get involved.
We have been talking to every organization that wants to talk about this issue, and that's sort of our policy. So we've had conversations with them. We've, have had conversations with all sorts of groups.
Okay, so campaign manager Daniels is telling the donor there that the campaign will talk with every organization on this issue, and this issue being Israel, of course. But then here comes Rob Kelman, again, supporter and former mayor of Eagle Harbor, who interrupts this discussion and says he's in contact with AIPAC officials and he's read McMorrow's AIPAC position paper. Listen.
I can tell you that I've talked with them directly because I know leadership locally and nationally. And they know very clearly that I'm supporting Mallory and why I'm supporting her. And I've read her AIPAC position paper. It's outstanding. I don't know if it's public or not. Mallory will benefit, I believe, because Abdul is going to hit Haley very hard over it. So there might be a bad spend, but Abdul is going to provide some cover on that.
AIPAC position paper. And I'm not sure you could hear it there, but Rob Kelman tried to say that he believed the position that Mallory was taking, whatever this middle position is, was probably the right one since Dr. El-Sayed was going to hammer Haley Stevens over her position on Israel. But for some reason, they don't think that the same could happen to Mallory. Okay. Now, Ryan Grimm writes, a spokesperson for the McMorrow campaign in a statement said that no questionnaire has been filled out. Rob Kelman is not part of the Mallory campaign. Our campaign does not speak through him, the statement read, and Kelman's offer to take additional questions, however, gives the impression, writes Ryan Grimm, that he was a lead part of the call rather than a supporter asking the campaign manager questions. Indeed, he answered questions on the call rather than asked them. And the campaign told Ryan Grimm, Mallory has not received nor filled out a questionnaire from AIPAC. Mallory has expressed her position on the war in Gaza publicly and to many groups representing Jewish and Muslim Michiganders, which is already publicly reported on her website. She also answered two questions on the issue of weapons and meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu on MSNBC earlier this evening, unquote. Now, Ryan Grimm continues reporting, asked in a follow-up if the campaign had produced a position paper, the campaign did not respond. The news outlet Jewish Insider, Ryan Grimm reports, says that McMorrow, according to a source familiar, had produced a position paper for at least one Democratic pro-Israel group. That is likely a reference to an AIPAC offshoot known as DMFI, or Democratic Majority for Israel. Okay, so right there, it sounds like to me like the McMorrow campaign is denying that they filled out a questionnaire, but nothing really said about a position paper. Whatever it is, it's not really great. However, this shows how difficult it can be for someone to run in the middle, like, or on the middle, or try to run somewhere in this mushy middle of such an important and consequential issue facing our country. We're talking about a genocide and American taxpayer money paying for that genocide. How can someone try to be in the middle of such an issue? But that's where McMorrow's apparently trying to be in this race, or at least on that issue. Actually, no, I think in the entire race. And I don't get it, as the Trump regime allows the Netanyahu regime to do whatever it wants, like the regime is basically Netanyahu's ragdoll. And in that recording, by the way, you also heard that bit of criticism of Andy Levin. Remember, he lost to Haley Stevens in the Democratic primary a few years back when their districts merged into one. And why? Because Levin had the audacity to show support for fellow Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who is facing a backlash anytime she dared criticize Israel. And AIPAC flooded Haley Stevens with loads of campaign bribes. I'm sorry, donations. And that's why they backed Haley Stevens, because they couldn't trust that Levin would do the right thing for them. Moving on. The University of Michigan newspaper, the Michigan Daily, recently published an op-ed by senior opinion editor. His name is Gabe Ephros, and he wrote the following about Mallory McMorrow. And I just wanted to share this one paragraph with you, if that's okay. The third major candidate in this Democratic Senate primary race is State Senator Mallory McMorrow. Her first major political moment came in the form of a response to a Republican state senator erroneously calling her a groomer. Yet, since announcing her run, she has not positioned herself as a moderate, taking unwavering, traditional, and often closer to the center Democratic positions, or as a maverick progressive proposing big and bold policies. Instead, she is quietly becoming the one thing that Michigan Democrats do not need, especially considering the Democratic Party's role as an unpopular opposition party, an establishmentarian who will vote in whichever direction party leaders choose at a given moment. An establishmentarian. Now, that's an interesting word to use to describe McMorrow. And if it's okay, Mr. Ephros, I am going to continue to use that one. I like that word. Now, Mr. Ephros argues how McMorrow is the Democratic establishment's choice. And see, I'm not completely sold on that, since many big-name Democratic Party office holders have announced their support so far for Haley Stevens. I've seen multiple people in Congress back Haley Stevens. Although it must be noted, Shokwe Pitchford, who is a Democrat on the Berrien County Commission, had to say last week that he never endorsed Haley Stevens after her campaign announced that he endorsed her. Of course, her campaign immediately pulled down the announcement. And then this week, Pitchford announced that he was backing Mallory McMorrow. Oh, what a bad week there for Haley Stevens. But Stevens, I think, still has the establishment Democratic Party backing for now. They may switch to McMorrow soon, since Haley Stevens is proving to be an utter disaster. But Gabe Ephros's op-ed on McMorrow, I think, is pretty spot on, because she hasn't exactly given some bold policy speeches or taken any real bold stances yet for the middle class. In that ad that I played here at the beginning of the segment, which again, I think is effective, McMorrow's still not saying how to fix things for the working class, unlike, say, other progressive candidates and office holders are saying. And here's yet another example of where Mallory McMorrow, I think, is making this major error by trying to stay in this mushy middle where she doesn't really want to take any kind of bold chances here. It's audio from our good friends from the progressive activist group known as Distill Social here in Michigan. And McMorrow recently talked with them, and the topic was universal healthcare. And this is what Mallory McMorrow had to say on that issue.
Why not just support universal health care?
It's a great question.
And one of the most devastating things in the Affordable Care Act was that the public option didn't become a part of it. It was a part of the legislation right up until the very end, and there just weren't the votes to pass it. This has been something that I've evolved into, frankly, from a lot of the work that I've done and relationships I've built with union leaders who have told me very bluntly, look, we have collectively bargained for the health care that we want, that we need, and who are you to take it away from us if we want it? The equivalency, we already see how this works in our country with education. I believe that that's going to set us up for the best success as a country is modeling our healthcare system off of our education system, where we have a guaranteed public option that we all pay into that is available for everybody, that frankly, when we think about the marketplace, even just having a public option is going to force private insurers to compete, to bring costs down, to make sure you have more affordable medications and provide better service to justify their costs if they're going to continue charging for private healthcare coverage.
Now, that's kind of an establishmentarian answer right there, is it not? I mean, McMorrill acknowledged that there are definite problems in the healthcare system, but she didn't provide any real or bold strategy to combat it. She didn't say that she would back universal healthcare. In fact, she used unions as a way to escape the question, saying that unions work hard to bargain for their contracts, and because of that, we can't pass universal healthcare. Okay, sure, I understand what she's saying, but here's the thing. Contracts end. Not to mention how, again, the Trump regime is defanging the National Labor Relations Board and replacing it with corporate management types, and not to mention how plants close even with contracts, as we've seen here in Michigan already. It was another moment where the state senator refused to take a bold stance when bold positions are needed. The people need to know that you are hearing them. Now, one candidate in the Senate race so far, Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, is, yes, a staunch supporter of universal health care. It's something that Mallory McMorrow hasn't pushed here in the state of Michigan while in the state Senate. It's another example of trying to play somewhere in this mushy middle, and it doesn't get you anywhere. Now, McMorrow claims that Democrats have to fight to win. I agree with her on that. But so far, I'm disappointed in that I'm not hearing a real fight coming from her or her campaign. I hear words. I hear some words. All right. And I see some decent ads. But that's all I hear are words, words, and words. No real bold stance. And perhaps that's why she's, for the moment, on the outside looking in for now. Now, State Senator McMorrow and her campaign, I love to have you back on the podcast to go over these issues and to explain some of the bold actions that you like to take to fight on behalf of the working class here in Michigan, and how you're going to vote to oppose Israel's actions in Gaza, how you're going to stand up as a voice for democracy in the United States Senate against the authoritarianism that we are seeing spread across the United States of America. So the door is always open. It's always an open invitation for you to come back here on the show. I love to talk with you again. And besides, you'd have an audience filled with common sense progressive Michiganders. Can't think of a better audience than that. You're listening to LOL.
This isn't a conservative podcast. We actually believe in freedom here. And we don't lose sleep over solar panels either. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Don't forget, we're on YouTube now. Subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever else you get your podcasts. Tell Pat what you think of the show by contacting him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, let's get back to the show with Pat Johnston.
All right, I'm already seeing lots and lots of MAGA hypocrisy being shared on social media and on Fox News regarding the murder of MAGA influencer Charlie Kirk. But I'll withhold my comments about such hypocrisy until the Friday short. I'm still going to be respectful today because gun violence is an epidemic and it's killing too many Americans. We need a change. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. I have to share some brief thoughts on a Michigan judge's decision not to hold a trial for those Michigan Republicans who tried to help their dear leader Trump steal that 2020 election by posing as alternate electors. Earlier this week, Ingham County District Judge Kristen Simmons, a Gretchen Whitmer appointee, dismissed the felony charges against 15 Michigan Republicans and ruled they would not face trial. Judge Simmons said there wasn't enough sufficient evidence to hold those 15 individuals to trial, and it was probably a stunning loss for Attorney General Dana Nessel, who brought the charges. As Ben Solis from Michigan Advance reported, the defendants included Republican National Committee woman Kathy Burden, former Michigan Republican Party co-chair Michonne Maddock, Hank Choate, Amy Facinello, Clifford Frost, Stanley Grott, John Haggard, Marianne Henry, Timothy King, Michelle Lundgren, Myra Rodriguez, Rose Rook, Marion Sheridan, Kenneth Thompson, and Kent Vanderwood. By the way, I mentioned Michonne Maddock. Well, her husband, of course, is the extreme right-wing MAGA Republican state rep, Matt Maddock from Milford. We've talked about him plenty of times on this podcast. Now, Judge Simmons ruled that there wasn't enough evidence to show that these 15 MAGA Republicans had criminal intent when they attempted to storm inside the state capitol to cast the state's electoral votes for Trump, even though Trump lost by 150,000 votes. The electors for Joe Biden, the legal ones, were already in the Capitol building on that December day of 2020, casting the Electoral College votes for Biden, since you know, he won the state. Nestle's office said the papers presented by the group to show that they were, quote, true state electors constituted fraud, since these MAGA Republicans were trying to defraud the votes of millions of Michiganders, including those who voted for Matt Maddox, by the way. You see, dear Leader Trump's henchmen needed these Michigan Republicans to cast their Electoral College votes in case dear Leader was able to successfully get Congress to help him steal the election. Well, he wasn't, and they got busted trying to wreck our democracy. But Judge Simmons decided that those 15 Republicans didn't know they were committing crimes and were just following orders from their dear leader. And she ruled that shows they did not intend to steal the election. Okay, so I guess Judge Simmons is saying, if you are ignorant of the law, you're not guilty of breaking the law? Do I have this right? Cool. MAGA Republicans, of course, rejoiced after the ruling was announced, and Matt Maddox is promising to sue Dana Nestle. Good luck with that, Matt. But let this be a lesson for many of you out there in how the courts are not going to hold those trying to subvert and destroy our democracy accountable. They aren't. Even more, the judge in this case essentially ruled that these Republicans were useful idiots who were used by dear leader Trump's people to try to steal an election. Well, I guess if you can take solace from anything, they're at least admitting the useful idiot part, I guess.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Join us next week when we'll talk with Terrence Martin, president of the Michigan chapter for the American Federation of Teachers. Listen, I just want to say this real quick. Escapism from what's happening in politics nowadays and what's happening to our country is needed. Enjoy the Lions this weekend. Well, I mean, let's hope we can enjoy the Lions this weekend. Or enjoy the Tigers with a fine Michigan beer, or watch a show, or simply just go outside and maybe light an evening fire and just sit around and be, since it's going to be a warm weekend and we're not really sure how many more summer weekends that we're going to get. It's good for your mental health to check out and rejuvenate once in a while. I do it a lot, especially on the weekends. Don't doom scroll on Twitter. Just go out and enjoy life and enjoy those close to you. And then next week, get ready to rejoin the fight for the working class and the fight for our democratic principles. Remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.